Well, this morning we have a guest joining us by phone, Angie Smith from the Narconon Arrowhead Agency with us this morning. Angie, good morning.
Good morning.
How are things in your world?
Things are pretty good. Nice weather and a little humid, but I can tolerate it.
Well, this time of the year, we're still talking about humidity. Soon we'll be talking about snow.
I actually just moved here to Oklahoma from California, so last year we didn't get snow until like Christmas time, but it's getting chilly already, so.
Well, it'll all happen sooner or later. Hey, we want to talk this morning about an issue that has to do with, is it fair to call it a designer drug, this K2 spice?
Yes, we could actually call it a designer drug. I mean, it's synthetic.
Talk a little bit about what that is.
Okay, well, K2, also known as spice, incense, or potpourri, is basically, it's synthetic marijuana. And it's a mixture of herbs or spices that's laced with a substance that mimic THC, and that's the chemical that's found in marijuana.
Is there a danger, Angie? And, we're used to hearing words like cocaine and heroin, marijuana, meth, things like that. But when we have some of these designer drugs and they call them something like potpourri, spice, those are nice words. Those are words that we think of in everyday life. Is there a danger in that being kind of a marketing tool, especially to young people?
It is kind of like a marketing tool because, I mean, it seems like everyday normal stuff that you can actually use, but what it is that they actually name it like that so that they can avoid being targeted as a drug.
Well, it just seems like, if the kids think of it, oh, spice. Well, gee whiz, cinnamon is a spice. Well, that can't be bad for me at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about more about this. What's the difference between spice and marijuana?
Well, marijuana tends to cause, like, outbursts of laughter. It also causes sleepiness. There are symptoms of forgetfulness and craving for sweets, or it's just like an increased appetite in general. Whereas with K2, it can cause extreme anxiety, paranoia, and even hallucinations.
Well, that doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun at all.
No, it does. No. Well, maybe for the person at the time.
Well,
but
so I suppose it's probably scary after you think about what you've just been through. But, hallucinations, yikes, those don't sound like fun at all. What else is there?
Well, I was actually just reading, according to the FBI, they actually were witnessing a 14-year-old boy in Florida who was admitted to the emergency room because he was experiencing like seizures and difficulty breathing. And then with further research, I saw that the poison control centers have reported a lot of users exaggerating about like a fast racing heartbeat, elevated blood pressure, and even nausea.
So it can be difficult sometimes for medical professionals who are called in to deal with something like this to even really know what they're dealing with.
Exactly. They have to always be updated, kept up with everything that's going on, especially like these new drugs are just coming in all the time. I mean, not only with K2 and spice, we've got bath salts and this new drug that I'm actually doing research right now because it's actually becoming a big situation nationwide. It's called Crocodile. It's actually a flesh-eating drug.
What's fun about that?
I think what it is that it's just cheap. And, of course, they think cheap is always better, and then they find out the consequences later on.
Yeah. Fresh air is cheap, too.
Yes.
If we just focus on some of the good things in our lives and not have to worry about trying to escape from everything, I guess. But, but it's hard to do that. I mean, there are always people in situations or people who fall into certain things that they just can't seem to get themselves out of on their own, and I guess that's why agencies like Narconon exist. But this K2 spice thing, I mean, is this growing?
Yes, actually. The first reports that we've ever, the first research that we've ever came across was in 2009, and the Chicago Tribune reported that emergency room visits in that year alone, there was only 13 for the whole nation. And then, so they did another study on the first half of 2010 itself, and it actually was reported to have approximately 560 visits. So that's a big jump in just one year.
Wow. That's a lot of emergency room visits.
And that's just the first half of 2010.
Yeah. Wow. Are there other numbers associated with that?
Yes, of course. The Poison Control Center actually has their own statistics, and they were saying in 2010... human exposure to synthetic marijuana was actually about like 2,900. Now, these are actually calls that came in about regarding synthetic marijuana. In 2011, their numbers raised to nearly 7,000 calls. I mean, that's more than double.
You know, I guess I never really got down to the basics of it. I hear you say things like human exposure, and it got to make me thinking, well, how are we exposed to it? Is this something they smoke, or do they take it orally? Is it injected through a needle? How do they do this?
I mean, they can get very creative. Usually it's smoked, but they can get creative by, just like with marijuana, they can bake it and use it as food. They can also make a liquid out of it and inject it as well. There's really no end to it. I mean, these people, they're... I'm not saying like these people, but the people who are addicted, they become very brilliant in a way because it's something that they're very passionate about.
Well, they harness all their energy to focus on something that's really non-productive.
Yes.
Counterproductive, I guess, when you boil it right down to it. You know, I want to. It's just funny, Angie, to somebody like me who, I mean, I've never even experimented with anything at all. For somebody like me, who's always, you know, I was brought up to be just deathly afraid of these things. You know, if you do it once, you'll get addicted. Don't ever do this kind of stuff. You know, it was driven into our heads as a kid.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine how someone would, well, jump into some of these things in the first place. But then when you start talking about some of these designers, some of these synthetic drugs that are things that, you know, somebody created somewhere in a back room someplace, who in the world is the first one to try some of these things? I mean, how messed up do you have to be to say, sure, you can guinea pig that stuff on me?
Well, here's the thing is that there's no regulation on it that's definite yet. And so what happens is with the controversial situation or talk about marijuana itself being legalized, it's hard for the government to actually to step in and say stop. And so there's rules to go by, regulations and steps to actually regulate this drug itself. And, of course, the media does not help. I mean, these movies are coming out now. It's more accepted. These teenagers are the ones that are actually getting hooked on the K2 the most because marijuana itself is actually their drug of choice, their number one drug of choice. Now, K2, when you get drug tested, it won't show up either.
Mm-hmm. Having a lot of states, though, at the state level, agency or governmental bodies have kind of tried to jump in to do something about synthetic drugs?
Yes. I mean, the DEA, the state drug control agencies, they have recognized the need to actually monitor and control these chemicals. I mean, at least 38 states have actually taken action to control synthetic chemicals, including bath salts. Congress itself has taken initial steps to ban many of these synthetic substances, but it does take time.
You know, you mentioned some of this, some of the effects, anxiety, paranoia, hallucinations, things like that. You know, those are effects from a lot of different things, too. Is it just a matter of not necessarily trying to identify what someone who we love might be addicted to, just the fact that they have an addiction and we need to take steps from there?
Yes. I mean, with all the different new drugs coming out, and of course with K2, it can be laced with any other kind of drug as well. I mean, it's hard to really just pinpoint and say, you know, this is just K2. It could be a various amount of different things that come together to make one situation or one product. And so my suggestion is if you sense something is wrong, seek help immediately. Every case is different. Every addiction is different. Talk to a professional who has been in the field. Call, like, agencies like ours. I mean, we help people out. We know what drugs are out there. We're obviously doing research. We're doing drug education and public services. So we can actually go, okay, so this is what he's doing, and he's also doing this? Well, it sounds like it must be a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And then we can actually approach this person or find the next step to actually getting this person to recovery.
Is it true, Angie, that addiction is not just addiction, that there are different reactions to different types of addictions?
Oh, yes. I mean, you've got your uppers, you've got your downers. And of course, there's some people who like to speedball, which is basically they like to do an upper and a downer. And so then you can't really tell because they're trying to, you know, once they reach that high and, like, excitement, they just want to go back down, calm down, and then they want to go back up again. You can't really just pinpoint. And, of course, with marijuana, you might be able to see a substance that looks like marijuana, but they're acting completely different and bizarre. And not to mention, it's also each person's chemical, it's how they're built. And so some people, even though like meth might make them excited and hyper, it can actually make another person just want to sleep. And of course, withdrawal symptoms is also the stage that they're in. You know, when a person goes up, they have to come down. So even though you see this person sleeping for days on end, it doesn't necessarily mean they're on marijuana or if they're on an opioid or opiate. They could be just coming down off of something.
Sure. So is there just one way to treat addiction, or is everything taken individually?
Everything is taken individually because a lot of times it's an emotional thing that triggers it. When you start an addiction, you'll start noticing like your relationship with your friends, your family, and your work has gone out the window. And so each situation is unique because if you actually, for example, if I had an addiction and my husband and I are going through a divorce, well, it's going to be a lot different for a person who's single. And so each person has their own demons. It's still like a devil, but each person has to deal with it differently. So finding the right type of treatment will actually help them out.
You bet. Well, if you think it's time to maybe exercise some of those demons, then one place you could turn would be Narcanon. And I know when people call or visit the website, there's always no obligation.
No obligation, no. We're here to help. I mean, we have an abundance of information that we will give out completely free. Everything is confidential per the HIPAA laws and everything. We just try to help as much as we can. We try to follow up, too, just to make sure that we did a good job helping people out who are calling in. And that's basically it. You know, we're just trying to help. If we can't help the first time, we'll try again. But our ultimate goal is to make sure that someone knows what they're doing.
Very good. And if they want to reach Narcanon, how can they do that?
They can call us at 1-800-468-6933, or they can go online at www.stopaddiction.com. Like I said, we have free educational booklets for your listeners. We have live representatives that are available to go over all the different types of drugs and any concerns that they may have, any questions, and even get help if listeners or a loved one needs to go into treatment.
Very good. Lots of good information. Angie Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you.